नमो तस्से भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा संबुद्धस्से। नमो तस्से भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा संबुद्धस्से। नमो तस्से भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा संबुद्धस्से। डियर धम्म फ्रेंड्स, वी वर डिस्कसिंग महाशून्यत सूत्र विच इज अवेलेबल इन मज्जिम निकाय, एंड बेसिकली दिस एक्सप्लेन्स हाउ वन हैव टू डिवेलप द practice of sunyata or the emptiness in a gradual way. So I tried to represent this in a kind of a flow chart. This is then it little bit easy for some people. So since we have covered almost all aspects and only a little more to do, so I thought of explaining it in briefly with this chart. So one may can even practice some of the meditation, and then in order to attain sunyata, the emptiness, one have to either shortly or long term have to attain, have to practice vipassana. So Buddha explains that one may use certain internal phenomena to attain emptiness, and sometimes he is successful and sometimes not successful. And he may use external phenomena to practice sunyata, to attain sunyata, emptiness. And sometimes successful and sometimes not successful. And one may use both, that means internal and external both phenomena to develop and establish in emptiness, and sometimes it is successful, sometimes not successful. If it is successful, then actually one can further continue one's practice to attain imperturbability, as explained in the Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta. We will discuss this after that sutta, after this Mahasunyata Sutta. So if that is successful, then he may be able to attain imperturbability. So that is basically another way of attaining Arupa Jhana, and that is more what Buddha mentioned as kind of an equanimity without many different ways, but have one single approach. And on the other hand, if one is not successful attaining emptiness, then he has to further practice samatha and vipassana so that he again will gain the capacity or the skill to attain emptiness. So this kind of a situation is going on in each practitioner if he wants to develop emptiness. So you can see, one may have to develop meditation, samatha and vipassana, and it leads to attain emptiness. And once it is there, once one reach there, so that has to be maximized. So this maximization is further explained very practically by Buddha, what I have mentioned, what I have shown in the right side, where are many different aspects Buddha mentioned. So this first one is the different postures, that is walking, standing, sitting, lying down. So when one is engaged with different postures, one has a kind of a determination that let my mind be free from defilements. So he is always in a way checking or investigating his mind whether there are presence of defilements, and he is very well aware of it. So he has full awareness about the situation, whether there are defilements or there are no defilements. So either in any posture, so Buddha mentioned that one has to have this kind of a vigilance, has to again and again look at, reflect one's mind whether there are defilements. And if one wants to talk, so then Buddha mentioned his mind turns towards talking with someone. So this is very practically Buddha explained. So it is not that every day, every time that one can simply be maintain the silence. So sometimes there may be a situation that he likes to talk with someone. So at that time Buddha asked, what is the subject that you are talking? There are useful subjects. There are 10 useful subjects Buddha mentioned in this Mahasunyata Sutta, and there are useless subjects as well. Those are harmful, and those are waste of time in a way, and detrimental to one's practice. So whenever one is engaged with any of these different kinds of talks, conversations, then one is very well aware of it. Sometimes due to certain reasons, you might have to engage with some unnecessary or a useless kind of chattering. So that is also sometimes we have to be aware of. But when we are aware of it, then we have to sort of shorten such discussion, how to minimize such discussion. If possible, one can avoid such discussion. And on the other hand, if one knows very well, now I am engaged with something useful, some conversation which is useful to myself and to the others, then one can continue that discussion, and that is also through full awareness. And then Buddha mentioned sometimes he want to think. Suppose that you want to plan something, that some you want to reflect something happened in the past. So likewise, there are situations that we have to reflect, we need to think, we need to ponder. And that time Buddha mentioned there are some beneficial subjects that we can think, and on the other hand, there are harmful subjects that we can think. So that is also one has to differentiate, and therefore one needs to recognize what I am thinking. So here the criterion is given based on the kama vitakka, sensual desire related thoughts, then vyapada vitakka, the thoughts of ill will, and vihinsa vitakka, thoughts of harming another. So those are the ones Buddha mentioned, those are harmful to oneself and to the others. So one should not engage in thinking these kinds of thoughts. On the other hand, the opposite, the nekkhamma vitakka, the renunciative thoughts, avihinsa vitakka, the harmless, compassionate thoughts, and avyapada vitakka, those are the thoughts of loving kindness. So those are helpful to oneself and the others. So if you really want to think, Buddha suggests that you better think on those kinds of thoughts. So therefore, in thinking also, one is quite aware of one's mind, what is the mind is going through, or what is the mind is engaged in thinking. So that is another area Buddha highlights in this sutta. And then further, Buddha talks about the reflection about five sensual cords. Now here we can recognize still the practitioner is not attained the non-returner, because only when one attain non-returner level, we can say one may be free from such kind of thinking. Now so far we had different kinds of thinking, talking, and maintaining different postures and all sorts of things, and there are a certain amount of sensual desires and all such mundane kind of thinking, and so such subjects may be available. But when one is developing properly, as Buddha mentioned, one may reach to a level that he can recognize even very subtle thoughts, subtle sensual desires one's mind is engaged with. So different things that one has seen, heard, cognized, or sensed, taste, sensed and cognized, and those kinds of subjects probably one may remember, and again mind may reflect on it and try to be delighted on it. So such things that Buddha mentioned that one has to reflect. Is my mind engaged with such kind of sensual desires? Is it get excited with such sensual desires? So that's again Buddha mentioned that one has to reflect. So if one is in completely engaged with these kinds of practices, then we can see one is able to attain path and fruition, and we can say little safely that one can even achieve a non-returner level. So according to the last one, Buddha mentioned how one has to eliminate even very subtle defilement called asmimana, or the notion of, or the conceit of I am. So this is very much like the root of our personality, the root of our whole ego, and root of our whole thinking, and that is based on I. There is an I, there is I am, so there is myself. So likewise, very rooted, subtle defilement, what we call as asmimana, which only can be eradicated when one becomes an arahanship. And probably you have heard there are 10 sanyojanas or fetters Buddha mentioned.
all previous five fetters, what we call as lower fetters, so orambhagya sanyojana, one can eliminate when one becomes non-returner. The rest, there are another five, what we call as the upper or level of defilements, fetters, called uddhambhagya sanyojana, where one's mind is still bound to the samsara, using very subtle defilements, and those can only be eliminated when one becomes an arahant. So that is briefly explained here in Mahasunyata Sutta, where one contemplates arising and passing away of clinging aggregates. So different aggregates are there, five aggregates are there. So mere aggregates is not the problem, but when our mind get clung to them, so that is where the issue happens. That is where the I am, such conceit, going to develop. So Buddha therefore mentioned that you have to have an I, kind of a vigilance, how the mind clings to different aggregates, whether it clings to form aggregate, whether it clings to feeling aggregate, or whether it clings to perceptions aggregate, whether it clings to formations aggregate, or whether it clings to different types of consciousness, knowing. So that one has to be aware when such clinging happens. If one is able to avoid eye making, mind making, so then that allows one to eradicate even this subtle defilement, what we call as I am, the conceit I am, asmimana. So even that process one is fully aware. So this is something Buddha highlights again and again, has full awareness. Sampajano hoti. Every time he is fully aware about the state of the mind. So therefore it is a process not merely based on deep concentration, rather a fair amount of very good mindfulness. One is fully aware. One is fully aware what is really going on. He is well established in the present moment and fully aware of his own mind. And therefore he is able to overcome various defilements. Now if we continue from there, so Buddha mentioned, after explaining all these different techniques, Buddha mentioned these states are entirely wholesome and have a wholesome outcome. They are noble, supramundane, and inaccessible to the evil one. So that is the Mara. So these are all these different practices are extremely wholesome, and they have the wholesome outcome, and noble and supramundane. And after mentioning that, Buddha talks another subject, that is, Buddha asks a question from Venerable Ananda, why one has to follow the Buddha, for what reason? Then Buddha himself mentioned that not just because of his different sections of Dhamma, that Buddha mentioned a disciple should not seek the teacher's company for the sake of discourses, stanzas, expositions, etc. So those are the different types of Dhamma. But Buddha mentioned why one doesn't need to follow the Buddha just for that. Because one can learn those. Actually now, even today, we have a fair amount of Buddha's teaching due to the conservation of all this material. And therefore, we may think that, okay, we have certain amount of Buddha's teaching. So that Buddha also highlights that you all have learned, so you have heard the teaching. It is not the main reason that you need to follow me. But later Buddha mentioned that time to time he makes a talk on those different 10 subjects, about the morality, about the concentration, about the wisdom, about the emancipation, the path leading to the emancipation, having less, being contented with what one have. So likewise, those are the points Buddha highlights, and those such kind of talks when Buddha deliver, so those are more aimed towards the Nibbana, more sort of attuned towards the Nibbana. So that is why one has to follow the Buddha. And then after mentioning that, so Buddha talks about another aspect, how one may lose one's practice. So what are the reasons? And here Buddha mentioned that how a teacher's undoing can come about. So here basically the idea is that how a teacher even face kind of a downfall in his own practice. So he mentioned that the teacher becomes somewhat well reputed, and he is finding a resting place and forest, and he find maybe a root of a tree, and so he start to practice. But because his reputation, different people, maybe say kings, farmers, Brahmins, householders, different countries from different towns, cities, and all these different people start to approach this teacher. And when he is being approached and start to converse, so he loses time. He doesn't have much time to his own practice. So slowly he become engaged with talking with others and engaged with long conversations. As a result of that, he slowly gets evil thoughts. Maybe about the gain, about the fame, how to protect it, how to improve it, and how even to overcome someone else's fame and gain. So even kind of competitive thoughts. So likewise, some unnecessary and detrimental type of thoughts he may now engage with, losing the seclusion, losing the kind of practice that he already had. And as a result of that, he is faced on some sort of a downfall, and he loses his balance, and ripening suffering, and he is growing it suffering, and as a result of that he may die not as a well developed person, but as a person who is not developed. This is how teacher's undoing comes about. And then Buddha mentioned how pupils' undoing come about. Now he is not a teacher, but he is a pupil, and he wants to have a fair amount of practice, and therefore he finds a secluded place, and there he starts to practice. But somehow people get to know about him, and they one by one approach him, and now many people approach him, now from different countries, different cities, towns, people are approaching, and slowly even this pupil reverts to luxury, and he starts to succumb to suffering. So as a result of that, Buddha mentioned, this is how the undoing of a pupil can happen. Now we can, actually the commentary mentioned that these two cases are related to the outside monastics, not much related to the Buddha's dispensation, Buddha's Sangha, but these two cases are explaining with respect to other monastics. So we can say therefore their practice is more into the Samatha. Even for Samatha practices, one has to have a fair amount of seclusion. And if one has fair amount of seclusion as the maximum, probably one can attain jhana. And even that is impossible when this kind of an undoing or this kind of a downfall happens either in the teacher or in the pupil. Now Buddha comes to the level, he is explaining Buddha's dispensation. Now here Buddha explained that he as the teacher, as the Tathagata, he arrives in the world, and he too proclaim Dhamma, and he too become well reputed. Anyway, he also wanted to live a secluded life for some time, and when he is spending his life secluded, then again different people approach him. There may be typical householders, there may be kings, merchants, maybe even different monks, other ascetics. So many different people approach the Buddha.
But even when they are approaching, Buddha is not going through some sort of a downfall. So that's the difference. So as a teacher, previous case, there's a possibility that teacher may face a downfall. But here, even when different people approach the Buddha, Buddha know how to maintain his balance. So therefore, he doesn't lose his balance, and therefore, he is not succumbed to suffering. And therefore, Buddha is the kind of incomparable leader of the persons, so he can tame the people. So that's the difference. But on the other hand, Buddha mentioned how his own disciple can face such situation. Now his own disciple. Now he is following the Buddha and he is following the Arahants, and he is now living in a particular place and he wants to practice. But now householders, kings, merchants, other fellow practitioners are approaching him. And when he is going through such kind of conversations, discussion, talks, etc., so he loses his time, and there's a possibility that he too face kind of a downfall. Now the disciple is vulnerable, so disciple, even though he is a disciple of the Buddha, still certain amount of risk is there, certain amount of vulnerability is there, so this disciple can face kind of an undoing, can face some kind of a downfall. And on the other hand, Buddha talks about kind of a gravity of the last case. Ananda, the undoing of one who leads the whole life, has a more painful result, a more bitter result than the teacher's undoing or the pupil's undoing, and it even leads to perdition. So this statement, I feel that if one is taking Dhamma in the wrong way, that is more dangerous. And if one is engaging one's spiritual life just aiming gain and fame, that is more dangerous. That Buddha highlights again and again in the Labha Sakkhara Sanyutta, in Sanyutta Nikaya, connected discourses of the Buddha. That could be the reason that Buddha sort of adding more gravity to the last situation or last scenario, where his own disciple facing such a kind of a downfall. So you can see the last statement Buddha mentioned is kind of a significant. The previous teacher, previous pupil are not really Buddha's disciples. They teach and talk about their own findings, and they too face kind of a downfall. On the other hand, Buddha and the Buddha's disciple is another scenario. Buddha is not vulnerable. Buddha, even when others are coming to discuss and maybe even disturbing, he can manage. But on the other hand, the disciple, Buddha's disciple, is in a difficult situation if he is not handling it properly. If he is turning himself to the other side, that means at first he is practicing well, but with time, if he is converting himself, transferring himself from the proper side to the wrong side, now he is teaching, aiming different gains and fames. Now he is preaching Dhamma to the others, aiming wrong aspects. Maybe the reputation, maybe sort of showing off, maybe for other gains. So these are more vulnerable, these are more dangerous than the previous situations. So that could be the reason that Buddha mentioned that he may engage with, or he may resulted in more bitter results, or he may face more bitter results than even the previous situations. So as disciples of the Buddha, therefore we have a greater risk than even the others. So because we are teaching and dealing with teaching which belongs to the Buddha, it is not our teaching.
Even Buddha has kept the Buddha's teaching as his teacher. Probably you can remember after Buddha becoming the Buddha become fully enlightened, he wanted to recognize a teacher whom I can keep as my teacher, because just being the very first enlightened, fully enlightened person, so I don't have a teacher, so whom I can consider as a teacher at least. Then Buddha find out, okay, there are no humans, there are no other celestial beings whom I can consider as my teacher. But the very Dhamma, very knowledge, very understanding that I have gained is the teacher that I can consider. So therefore Buddha himself has respected the Dhamma. So when we are dealing with such Dhamma, therefore we have to be very careful. So if we misrepresent, or if we are using it for gain and fame, and sort of using it to harm others, to argue with others, then we are in a wrong situation. So that is actually highlighted in certain other suttas like Alagaddupama Sutta. Probably we can discuss that also in another situation. Actually someone has requested that to discuss. So therefore, when we are dealing with Buddha's teaching, it is the teaching actually helping us to completely free from suffering. But if we are misusing it, there is a higher danger, higher risk, higher danger. Now after mentioning that whole explanation, Buddha now make a kind of a request from Venerable Ananda and the other monks. Therefore, Ananda, behave towards me with friendliness, not with hostility. That will lead to your welfare and happiness for a long time. Now, this is a kind of an indication how Buddha, in a way, expects others to behave. Now, he is the supreme teacher. And now how others have to behave towards him. So this is a kind of an explanation Buddha gives here. So the point highlighted is, consider Buddha as with friendliness, not with hostility. So what is the point mentioned here? So how one can consider Buddha with friendliness and how one can consider Buddha with hostility? So this is something that we need to recognize. And here Buddha mentioned, now how disciples behave towards the teacher with hostility, not with friendliness. And so that is being explained, how one behave with hostility. Here Ananda, compassionate and seeking their welfare, the teacher teaches the Dhamma to the disciples out of compassion. Now talks about the Buddha. Now he became fully enlightened and now he teaches the Dhamma to the disciples. This is for your welfare. This is for your happiness. His disciples do not want to hear or give ear or exert their minds to understand. Now, even though Buddha teaches out of compassion, there may be disciples who are not ready to listen, who are not ready to correct themselves. And they err and turn aside from the teacher's dispensation. Thus, do disciples behave towards the teacher with hostility? Now, here the situation is, when the listeners, when the disciples are not properly listening, not properly behaving towards the teacher, towards the Buddha, so that is how they are behaving with hostility. And on the other hand, the other side, how one can behave with friendliness towards the teacher, towards the Buddha, not with hostility. Now the opposite is explained. Now when Buddha teaches the Dhamma out of compassion, so they turns their ears. So they start to listen. They start to properly listen. They start to restrain themselves. They start to respect Buddha's teaching. They start to engage in Buddha's teaching. They start to practice. So this is how Buddha explained that someone is properly behaving friendly to the Buddha. It is not that going after the Buddha, looking after the Buddha. It's not something that he highlighted here. Rather, when he is explaining Dhamma and teaches Dhamma, how one has to behave according to Dhamma. give proper attention towards the Dhamma. So that is something Buddha expected, we can say, and that is something we can maintain so that we too can live friendly with the Buddha, not with hostility. And further, another point highlighted is how Buddha tames the disciples. So after explaining how one has to behave towards the teacher, towards the Buddha, with friendliness and not with hostility, and then Buddha mentioned, I shall not treat you as the potter treats the raw damp clay. Raw damp clay. Now here the explanation is given in the commentary and by Bhikkhu Bodhi also in his translation. Now how a potter treats his damp clay. Raw damp clay. Now when potter treats his raw damp clay, now again and again he is changing it, again and again removing it, again and again changing to different colors or different shapes, because those are not yet burnt. But the opposite is mentioned, how Buddha treats the disciples. So once pots are being burnt, now still there may be certain cracked pots and certain leaking kind of pots, certain damaged pots still available. So in order to recognize that, the potter may simply knock to it or just looking at it properly, and only the better ones he is keeping and the rest he is removing. He may be even destroying. So it's very much like Buddha mentioned here, repeatedly restraining you, I shall speak to you, Ananda. Repeatedly admonishing you, I shall speak to you, Ananda. The sound core will stand the test. Now here, Buddha in a way tests the disciples as the second, as a second way. That is very much like the potter has now burnt the pots. Now he can't change the shape. But only thing he can do is to recognize which pot is the better pot, which one is betterly burnt, which one is which one doesn't have any leaks or any kind of other defects, so that only the better or the best pots that he is taking and going to sell, he is taking them to the, say, the shop. So likewise Buddha mentioned, when I am teaching, I am again and again repeatedly teaching, explaining, and trying to restrain, trying to admonish, so that ultimately only the cream, only the best may remain. So you can see a kind of a different approach Buddha has taken. He doesn't need to have so much of defiled disciples who even not following the Buddha. So sometimes people like to have many disciples. Hundreds, thousands of disciples are there, but only a few may follow the teacher. But the Buddha's approach is only to keep who are following him, who are listening to him, who are ready to restrain themselves, who are ready to practice properly. So that is the cream. That is the people who are living friendly to the teacher and not with hostility. Only that group Buddha wants to keep. So, therefore, we can see Buddha's approach is not just increasing his number of disciples. He may constantly admonish, he may constantly try to restrain, so that only the cream, only the best people may remain. So, this is another point that Buddha highlights in this sutta, and that point actually the sutta ends. So different points are highlighted First, with how one may develop emptiness, very practically, what are the different methods available, and then how one has to maximize that emptiness in day-to-day activities, in day-to-day living, while walking, while standing, while sitting, while lying down, and while talking, when thinking, how to properly think so that one may not harm oneself and one's dwelling in the emptiness, and again how one is further developing one's mind by uprooting different defilements. So one has to reflect one's mind again and again to see whether there is an excitement happens due to five sensual cords, and is there any clinging, grasping has happened towards the five aggregates. So likewise, some broader explanation is given regarding the practice, and after that Buddha mentioned another points that we have discussed today, how one may live properly, or how one may respect the Buddha properly by being friendly to him, not with hostility, and what are the dangers available to a teacher, to a pupil, and to the Buddha and his disciple, and how Buddha is trying to restrain the pupils or restrain the disciples. So those are the other aspects Buddha explained in this Mahasunyata Sutta. So we can consider this whole Mahasunyata Sutta as a really say deep sutta with many attributes of his teaching, especially the higher attainments and training is explained very well, and what is his aim or the objective of his teaching is also explained, and how disciples have to behave is also explained. So I think we now can conclude today's Dhamma sermon, and as we have reached the end of the sutta, and we discuss Chula Sunyata Sutta as well as the Mahasunyata Sutta, and with that I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon, and probably we can take another sutta on the next week. Now I like to open the session for questions.
So for those who's not familiar, you may ask questions by raising your hand, or you may also send them via the chat. Bhante, as a preview for everyone here, do we have an idea as to what the next sutta may be?
Yeah, actually I thought of discussing Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta, because that is also explained taking different approach, particularly related to the feelings, how Buddha explained one has to develop further and further in one's practice, going deeper and deeper in one's practice. So that is also quite interesting and really informative, instructive. So therefore I thought of taking Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta, which is available in Majjhima Nikaya, as our next sutta.
Question that came into the chat. Dear Bhante, in the flow chart, does the left side represent the meditation practice and the right side the daily activities? Thank you.
Yeah, the left side actually shows the achievement of the emptiness, or how one can reach emptiness. Just the technical part, the vipassana and the achievement or the attainment of the emptiness. So attainment of the emptiness. But the right side is the fully maximizing that. How one may keep it as a kind of one's own vehicle. How one may again and again cultivate it, fulfill it, try to complete it, try to be really be with it, makes it like one's own home. So this is where the different daily activities and different behaviors are well explained. So therefore we can say the left side is just the technical aspect of the sunyata. The right side is more how one may develop it, use it properly to remove defilements and to recognize defilements, and even to the subtle defilements, so that one become fully enlightened. Yeah.
I guess, Bhante, while we wait for other questions, I was just wondering, so when we are in our daily life, and then sometimes it seems like there's an like a big ball of all different kinds of how do I explain this? Sometimes it just seems like there's a big ball of, you know, all different things all together, but you cannot distinguish between what is it that you are actually aware of, and at that moment, whether there's any particular thoughts, as well as any specific feelings, but it's just kind of all bounded together.
Mm-hmm.
In that moment, Bhante, we can just be aware of all of this.
Correct.
Together,
yeah.
In aggregate, right? We don't
exactly
need to distinguish.
Yeah, you are correct. You are correct, because sometimes the thoughts are not easy to distinguish, because that is another aspect of the practice. Because when one even reach the emptiness, one may come through such kind of a blur area, where one can't distinctly recognize thoughts. Now, say for example, at the beginning and the middle of the Chittanupassana, probably one may be able to clearly recognize different kinds of thoughts. This is a lustful thought, this is a thoughts of ill will, this is a sort of, thoughts of jealousy. So likewise, one can properly recognize what type of thought. But slowly, when one start to continue in that practice, later thoughts may come and go very quickly, but there is no enough time, or there is no enough information available to recognize which type they are, to which category they belong, to either to wholesome or unwholesome. So one may simply know it is simply a thought, maybe even simply a perception, maybe simply a kind of a little excitement. So very quickly they pass away, because one is not promoting them, one is not feeding them, so just being mindful about them, so that very mindfulness is enough for their disappearance, for their fading away. So even, after one may go through such kind of a situation, one may reach emptiness, and now one is trying to dwell in that emptiness. While being there also, there may be situations that one may come through same sort of situation, but here different kinds of thoughts are coming abruptly, and they are coming as a bulk amount, and there you can't do anything. It's very much like you have opened the slough gate of a dam, where everything is coming very quickly, you have no control, you simply have to observe. After some time, everything gone out, and now things are calmed down. So this, we can say, you are reaching different layers of the mind. Actually, Buddha doesn't talk in that terms. If it's just for simple explanation, if we can tell like that. So as you are continuing your practice, very much like you are coming to deeper and deeper layers of the mind. So when you are reaching one layer, so there may be certain amount of defilement, certain amount of impediments available there. So they sort of manifest as a bulk amount of thoughts, and you simply have to bear with it. You simply have to be patient with them, and then they simply go away. And after that, very much like you are landing on a very further calm state. It's very much like purging, vomiting of mental vomiting or purging happens during one's practice.
Okay, thank you, Bante. I'd like to take the first question from Teacher Devi. May I mute?
Thank you, Jennifer. Bante, my question is that, as far as I understood, the Buddha wants the people to go after the fourth jhana before they can give attention to the voidness internally, and I presume look at the five aggregates in the correct way. So can people just turn into this voidness, to look into the voidness by after the first jhana, Bhante?
Definitely can.
So why does the Buddha say we have to go after that? Because obviously this is for very advanced, I think so, like monks and nuns who are doing it all the time. So for the average layperson, you have to have a lot of time also to sit down. Would that be right if I said that, Bhante?
Yeah, actually different approaches are mentioned. So,
yes.
I mean, using first jhana, using second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth. So likewise, I think what is explained in the Attaka Nagara Sutta, explained by Venerable Ananda. So many approaches are mentioned. Actually, one person come and ask, what are the different procedures or different methods Buddha explained, and Venerable Ananda mentioned that it's not just a one method, there are many methods. So therefore, it is not right to say that one definitely have to attain fourth jhana and then only one can reach emptiness. And on the other hand, one can say even you don't need any of these jhanas, one can have a fair amount of concentration, I mean not to the level of jhana. And
yes.
then engage with developing vipassana, and using vipassana one can attain emptiness.
So even in daily practice, once the student goes up to a good level of concentration where the nivaranas are put down,
yeah,
then one can turn into looking into the vipassana, then voidness, right?
Yes. Actually, through vipassana, one may reach voidness, and
yes. Because from what I understood, just only getting the jhanas, if you don't switch to the vipassana, then you can't get into this void state. Would that be right?
Yeah, correct. Because I mean, jhana mere jhana does not turn towards the vipassana, turns towards the emptiness. So while after one may develop fair amount of jhana, so one has to have a kind of an inclination,
yes,
to have a kind of a determination, change of direction from samatha to vipassana in order to switch to emptiness. Because in the samatha approach, one is always taking with an object, and there is an object,
yes,
to practice, and one takes that object as a kind of a permanent object, as a kind of a blissful, pleasant, positive kind of a scenario, and
yes,
using which one may attain jhana. But on the other hand, when one reaches vipassana, especially emptiness, signlessness, etc., so one has to lose the object. So it's very much like objectless. So there is no object at all. So in order to turn towards that direction, so one had to change one's direction from samatha to vipassana. So
yes,
that is why even when one reaches higher state of jhana, one has to turn from jhana, one has to reflect jhana, that jhana is impermanent, jhana is non-self. This is vulnerable,
yes,
and this is conditioned. So likewise, one has to reflect the disadvantages of jhana, and then only one can turns away from jhana and turns towards the vipassana and sort of engage or go towards the emptiness.
So as lay people, I mean, we have to sit for quite a while. I mean, I find that I have to sit for quite a some highest state. So, I mean, I suppose that is correct. No, but then we have to sit for quite a while to get into the into any sort of positive states. Would that be right?
Actually, in one's practice, it depends. So, certain people have a fair amount of concentration, and therefore they can practice more vipassana, more mindfulness. So, because they already have some amount of concentration. But on the other hand, certain others have to develop concentration. So that also requires some amount of time, and therefore they need both. So therefore, I mean, this is difficult to give a definite answer, and certain people have their own skills. I mean, even though they are lay people, they are born with fair amount of potential, and when they encounter Buddha's teaching and with less practice also, they can come to fair amount of understanding. So it depends on this person's we can say the term parami here.
Because actually, I mean, yeah, you know, we don't have regular teachers and all that much, so sometimes I like to sit for a while to get real deep concentration. I think I, you know, because we have been practicing for some time now, I do get the concentration.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to have, I like to have that deep concentration, if you know what I mean, Bhante.
No, actually, you know, actually, now you can see in the whole discussion of Mahasunyata Sutta, deep concentration is not the thing highlighted. So actually what is highlighted is the last part, that is being fully aware of it, has full awareness. So this is something I like to highlight, because actually that the sunyata level, the emptiness level and the imperturbability level, so probably some amount of deep concentration is available. But
yes.
when one develops that in the day-to-day activities, and when one is cultivating that very emptiness in daily activities, one may encounter the defilements, because those are the sort of disturbances towards the vipassana. Towards the emptiness. Now,
yes.
At that time, one is using these defilements as a kind of a raw material for one's purification.
Yes.
Now, you can see, I mean, when one dwell in very deep concentration, there are no defilements because of the concentration power. So, it's very much like a fence, very much like a wall towards the
yes.
defilements. So, there are no possibility of arising defilements. But on the other hand, when one talking with another person, when one simply thinking, when one walking, standing, sitting, lying down, so those are very mundane kind of ordinary activities, and there are higher possibility available to arise defilements, but one is fully aware of it, has full awareness. So there one has the capacity to recognize those defilements and to eliminate them and to dilute them. So ultimately, he may reach the emptiness, but not with higher concentration, but by weakening
yes.
defilements. But by weakening defilements. So this is more wise approach. We can say more intellectual kind of approach, rather than simply suppressing defilements through concentration. Now one reaches emptiness by weakening defilements.
Yes, because we are actually talking, and we are also encountering all this chatter, and we can see that is not the correct way to go.
Hmm.
Because sometimes what I'm understanding from the sutta is that the Buddha is encouraging us encouraging his disciples not to talk too much, while even those monks were all getting together and doing the ropes.
Hmm.
He didn't encourage that kind of
correct.
Behavior.
Exactly. Yes.
But it sometimes can be difficult as lay people, isn't it, Bhante?
and not only as lay people, I mean, not only as lay people, even as monks. Now, even as monks, I mean, we are human beings, so we are not
yes.
fully enlightened. So, I mean, we all have the potential to go in wrong directions, going to socializing and having a company,
have relationships. So it's also vulnerable. So in a way, I mean, it is not, I feel, merely the either lay or sort of ordain which matters, but how one can be mindful about one's own practice and recognizing one's defilements and understanding one's goal, keeping that as kind of as the front, as one's determination. So many aspects are there. So being a monk or a layperson is only one aspect.
Mm-hmm. Because like recently I met up with some friends, but you know, you feel you have to not partake too much because it's sort of a very mundane talk, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bhante?
Yeah.
So sometimes you have, I'm quite happy to be silent, but then also you can't be silent if you know.
Exactly.
I mean, if you think something is, you're a bit, you know, something's wrong with you kind of thing.
Yes,
you're not
partaking, no? Yes.
So we have to balance, you know.
Yes.
It's not always, easy, I believe.
Definitely not,
You might agree with me.
Yes, sure. It's very practical. And
yes.
So we have to maintain our relationships, we have to maintain our friends, so that is also there. So I mean, we don't need to sort of hurt them. So how to maintain our relationships without damaging them, in the meantime maintaining the practice as well. So these are very challenging, actually. Very true.
Yeah, because those 10 dasakata, solitude, and you know, we are supposed to not engage in all these things, but you know, be within, you know.
Yeah.
So
I think the approach may be, now suppose you are going to a party and meeting friends. So at that time, probably there is a fair amount of excitement, fair amount of disturbance happen to the mind.
Yes.
But later, once you return home, now you need to find time for seclusion. There you need to again heal the mind, again sort of recover from those difficulties. Actually, then one is having some sort of a seasoned mind, some sort of a mind which is capable of withstanding such situations. Because it is not always the case that one is escaping from all situations, rather how one can have a fairly endurable mind, isn't it? Kind of a mature mind which can withstand difficult situations. Now I can give some examples from now Buddha's own character. Now Buddha lived in Jetavanarama. So Jetavanarama is in a way very luxurious place. And again, he went to the king's palace, say King Kosala, so his palace, and to Anathapindika's place, to Shaka's place. So he has associated a certain amount of luxurious places. But he is not faced any kind of a downfall because of such association, because he has completed the task. So therefore, he has the possibility or the capacity to meet any different situation, So, because his mind is so unshakable in a way, by facing gain, fame, reputation, etc., he doesn't go on to a wrong direction. Rather, he is able to maintain his capacity properly. So, likewise, the other persons, other disciples also may have to go through these difficulties, kind of challenging situations, and that is sometimes maybe successful, sometimes maybe kind of failures, but these failures can be used to strengthen one's practice, and so that again one may not fall down, one may not get into a wrong direction, have to correct oneself. So it's a kind of a corrective approach that we have to take. So you are unmuted. Muted.
Sorry, Bhante.
Yeah.
It says about about pondering, you mentioned that under the thinking, reflecting and pondering, so we have to go back and do it more and more, isn't it, Pante?
Yeah, it depends. Yeah, I mean, there are situations that we need to ponder and see what is the best possibility of doing something. So that is a useful way of thinking.
Yeah, because anyway we have to, Bhante, because in the lay life there's a lot of disturbance because we are living the lay life, but we have time to go even a few minutes when we get back, as you say, to go through this and whatever the thinking, the thoughts, the behavior, the excitement, and get back to the base.
Correct. Yes.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah, okay, welcome.
Bhante, I believe that was the last question that we received tonight.
Okay.
Are there any more questions?
Okay, that means we have come to the completion of today's program. So then we can start the next program next week. Actually, next week also, I feel that's opposite. let me see. Today's 23rd. Second. Yeah. So actually, Jennifer, next Wednesday also, I am unable to conduct the session. Because that is also falling another Uposatha. And so we may meet with the new sutta. Maybe that is on 9th of March.
Okay.
Okay,
no
then.
Problem.
Okay, then we'll wind up today's session by sharing merits. Ettavata cha amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata cha amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata cha amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha cha bummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantang anupoditva chirang rakkantu sasanang. Akasattha cha bummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanang. Akasattha cha bummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu mamparang. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punyakammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punyakammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.